Hey there, and welcome to Wildcard on CFRC 101.9 FM, the weekly spoken word program that broadcasts academic and cultural events happening within Kingston and the Queen's University community. I'm your host, Brennan Wilson, and today we'll be airing an interview with Queen's alumni Farah Muhammad, who I had the pleasure of sitting down with for a talk. We'll also be airing parts of her presentation here at Queen's, which took place on Wednesday, March 13th, 2013. Farah Muhammad is the president and CEO of the Girls 20 Summit, which brings together one female delegate from each G20 country, plus a representative from the African Union to debate, discuss, and design innovative solutions necessary to empower girls and women globally, so they can contribute to the economic and political stability of their countries. The summit has taken place in Toronto, Paris, and Mexico City, and this year it will be held in Moscow. Farah has also been the inaugural president of the Belinda Stronach Foundation, helping to start programs such as the Girls 20 Summit, Laptop Per Child Canada for Aboriginal youth, initiatives in Liberia with President Johnson Sirleaf, and the humanitarian relief in Haiti following the 2010 earthquake. She has also been the Vice President of Public Affairs and Community Engagement at Vaughan Canada, and the Director of Communications to Anne McClellan in her role as Deputy Prime Minister, Minister of Health, and Minister of Justice in Canada. Farah has received the Queen's Jubilee Medal, named one of the top 25 women of influence, and received the Diversity Award for Women of Influence. Hi, this is Brendan Wilson with CFRC. I'm sitting here with Farah Muhammad on March 13th, 2013. Farah, would you like to tell me a bit about yourself and the Girls 20 Summit?
Sure, why don't I start by saying that I went to school here at Queen's University for my arts degree, and I graduated in 1993, and I walked from the water up here, and I thought, oh my goodness, either I'm losing my memory or things have really changed. But it's great to be back. Myself, I'm Ugandan-born, raised in Canada, Indian heritage with a Persian name, so I think I pretty much kind of look like the poster child for Canada these days. But I'm really happy to be back, and I'm happy to have a chance to talk about Girls 20. Do you want me to talk to you a little bit about what Girls 20 is about and sort of fill you in the blanks?
That'd be great.
Sure. About 4 years ago, I took a job with Belinda Stronach, who was a former cabinet minister and is a really amazing businesswoman. And the job was basically to set up a foundation for her. And during that time, she really gave me the latitude to be creative. And since I have a political background and a communications background, one morning I woke up and thought, we should have a Girls 20 because Canada's going to host a G20. And what better way to put a very economic issue on the agenda of G20 leaders, who are largely a political body but are worried about economics. And while I believe it's important to talk about the equality of girls and women and the human rights of girls and women, there are other organizations that do that, and they do it really well. What we thought was missing was a conversation about the economic prowess of girls and women. And that's what really Girls 20 is really about. It brings one girl together from each G20 country, plus a girl from the African Union, a girl from the European Union, and they have their own G20. They debate, they discuss, they argue for their positions, they learn, they do workshops, which is a little bit different than the leaders, and then they come up with a communique. So I'd be happy to fill in a lot of the blanks, but that's broad strokes of what the Girls 20 Summit is really about.
Awesome. So how did you come up with the concept for the Girls 20?
I think there's a little bit of marketing wannabe hidden somewhere in me, and what I really enjoyed about my time at Queen's is it really taught you to just sort of really think outside the box, and I think I've carried that through my life. So when I started working with Belinda, the only two things that really were limitations was, let's not compete with others who are doing the same thing, and let's figure out what is it that's needed. And with those two parameters, really, I got to be creative. And so it really came down to, the Canadian government is host to the G20. We have a very serious growth issue on our hands. How do you ensure that from the perspective of growth of companies, communities, and countries, we are maximizing everything we possibly can? Well, when it comes down to people, we're not in fact doing that. 50% of our human resources are girls and women. And so we thought, we're not maximizing. How do we do that? And Girls 20 just sort of came to be. We put together this terrific group of female leaders from the business community, the banking community, lawyers, an artist, and we had dinner. There was a bit of wine flowing, I'll admit. And we thought, this sounds like a great idea. How do we put this together? How do we make it happen? And let's be really unique and aggressive about it. Let's do this within 6 months. And that's what basically happened.
That's great. Did you have any specific experiences here at Queen's that might have contributed to your recent accomplishments?
Why does the mind automatically go to the stuff that you shouldn't share? I actually had some really great formative experiences. And I guess the first one that comes to mind is I was raised in Burlington, Ontario, and here I came to Queens, and I grew up in a very modest family. So my parents came to Canada as refugees. They were very wealthy when they were growing up. They came here with a couple $100, a couple kids, and a couple suitcases. And I was a scholarship kid. And coming to Queens taught me that it didn't matter what your background, it didn't matter what your wealth was, it mattered how hard you were going to work. And it mattered that you believed in yourself. And I think that's what Queens does. It cultivates the kind of curiosity and confidence that young people need today to be able to compete. So when I look at what I took away from this, yes, I took away a phenomenal network of great friends and people who have done amazing things, probably because they're Queen's grads. but for myself, I never believed that I was anything but able to achieve my goals and encouraged to do so here, work really hard, which I've carried on right through my life, and being at the right place at the right time gets you in the door, but it doesn't necessarily keep you in the room. So if you want to keep in the room, you've got to work hard, you've got to be creative, and you've really got to say, look, you know, it may work this way, it may work that way, you got to trust your gut. And I feel like my 4 years here at Queens was all about trusting my gut, figuring out what was right, how far did I want to go, how fast did I want to go. And then, you know, part of working in a bar, I worked in Alfie's. That taught me some lessons as well. So that was kind of interesting. I was actually a constable. I wasn't a bartender. I don't think they would trust me or something. But, it, you know, again, it teaches you to stick up for yourself. I'm 5'1". You know, there's some pretty big guys and gals on campus that come into that bar. So you just get confidence. And I think that's a huge part. I think that's a huge part of the game today is having that confidence to take a risk.
So how did you select all the girls from around the world?
I love this question. The reason I love this question is it's, you know, I think it's probably the most creative way to do a partnership. So, you know, we're sitting in Toronto, and while we're a Canadian-based, globally active organization, how do we find those girls? We get 50, currently we have 50 different international, national partners, and these are the worldwide WCA, Girl Guides, Bono's One, Tony Blair's organization, and we basically say to these organizations, look, here is the entire campaign. We will position you as a partner, both in terms of dissemination and content, if you will disseminate this campaign through your local offices. So we go grassroots, right? It's not about spending millions of dollars or thousands of dollars with a big advertisement in a paper. It's about having these organizations who are on the ground saying, this is a great opportunity, apply. And then what happens is these girls apply and we get thousands of applications. And the girls come from all different walks of life. So they might be really smart. They may not be doing well in school. They may have a lot of money or they may be dirt poor. One thing they all have, absolute ambition and a determination to make the world a better place for girls and women. So they apply. We have about 21 different readers that are assembled from our partners, our advisory group, our board. They read through all of the applications in a country and they pick their top two. And what we did this year is, working with Google, we actually had all of the candidates, if it was possible for them to do this, to send in a YouTube video of themselves. So there are three ingredients. One, don't determine who should apply. Let a girl apply if she wants to apply. Two, use your partners as your network. And three, be as open and inclusive as possible. That means let them fax it in. Believe it or not, people still use fax. Let them email it in, let them mail it in, let them give it to an organization who can send it in for them. But accessibility to be able to get to you should not be the barrier.
So what some of the discussion that's come out of the past few summits? Hmm.
Well, let me explain a little bit about how the summit works. So in the lead up to the summit, the girls are actually put through quite a reading process, a reading and research process. So for example, this year, the focus of the G20 is jobs, growth, and investment. So we take that agenda as our own, and we say, okay, in the area of jobs, growth, and investment, let's look at health, agriculture, mining, and oil and gas. So the girls had to come prepared in those areas. So we make sure that we work with our partners, and we have great volunteers who come up with this, the latest, greatest research from the World Bank or the World Economic Forum. That is required reading for the girls. They also go through a Myers-Briggs assessment, and this is put together by Norton Rose, which is the world's largest legal firm now. They came to us with an idea and said, we want to put the girls through this assessment. It's incredible. 18 years of age, and you know your strengths and your challenges. So they do that, and this is all done before they actually get to the summit. This year it takes place in Moscow. When they get to the summit, really what happens is... you know, they first are, you know, they're pretty excited to be there. In some cases, it's the first time they've ever gone on a plane. That's kind of cool. And then they get there and we give them, I don't know, about 3 hours to get settled. We feed them and then we get started. And we do these different workshops. So we spent about 3 days over 5 sessions doing different workshops. So they have a leadership workshop, financial fundamentals workshop, a workshop on media and public relations, and then a workshop on... how to use technology to accelerate your voice, right? We have all these things at our fingertips, but are we teaching our kids how to actually use these things? I say kids because I'm 42 and they're 18, but, you know, everything's relative. And then what happens is they have a 2-day summit. So the summit is on the issues that the G20 is looking at. Then to answer your question, what comes out of that is a discussion from these girls about what do they think G20 leaders need to do? So do we need to make sure that every single building that is built in the next 10 years has a wireless capacity? So girls have the opportunity to learn, to seek opportunities, all that kind of stuff. Do we need to remove taxation on female products? Because why are we taxing things like tampons? That's another way to prevent girls from being able to go to school. So what are the things that we need to do that are financially game changers and will allow girls to be, and women, to be active participants of the economy? So we look at things like that. In the area of agriculture, one of my favorite things is, you know, lots of farmers are females, but they don't get to own their property. That's a big, big challenge. So why don't we change property laws? Governments can do that. And the other thing we say is, look, it's not up to governments to change everything. Private sector has a role, not-for-profits have a role, and government has a role. And so from our perspective, we say to the girls, okay, now that you've come up with these great ideas, what are you going to do about it? So they don't come to the summit, get together, make 20 new best friends, sing kumbaya, and go home. No. After they're done that and they've handed over a communique to the G20 leaders, they have to go back home and start their own initiative or join another organization that has an initiative. And that's what we call pay it forward approach, right? The domino effect, whatever you want to call it. It's about creating these social entrepreneurs who will go home and really start to model out that behavior.
Actually, it's right in my next question. What have some of the girls gone on to do in their countries after that?
Well, we've had 62 girls. Yeah. Last year, unfortunately, the girl from Turkey could not travel because her school did not allow her to miss her exams, even though they had given her permission. So unfortunately, we have 62 girls, but we got 62 amazing girls. And of those girls, 27 of them have actually started their own initiatives. So I'll give you 2 examples. A young woman from Indonesia came to the summit. When she arrived, she had a really big focus on health issues. She came and she listened and she learned. And I remember one of the speakers was Rita Roy from the MasterCard Foundation. She's the president and CEO. And they were talking about the importance of just being able to read. So Kartika goes back to Indonesia and with her friends gets a bus donated, rips out the seats, puts up shelving, gets books donated, and her buddies go into the slums of Indonesia, and now they read to kids, girls and boys. That is a game changer, right? Another girl, she started, so one girl in California and one girl in South Africa decided that what they would do is mobilize their friend network. So in California, she would raise funds for kids to get supplies to be able to go to school in South Africa. Because often, if you don't have a pencil, a paper, a uniform, these are these are things that prevent you from going to school. So they identified a need. They identified a source of funding. They then, instead of just handing it over, had a scholarship program. And the two of them worked on this together. There's no red tape. There's no, and there's complete accountability. And we're asking for kids in California to give $20 a year. $20 a year allowed NOMA, so that was Julie Lee, allowed NOMA to actually, you know, work with her friends to find these kids who otherwise were not going to school. So I'm tons of examples of that, but really it's a collaborative approach where they're saying, what's the need and what's the solution?
Yeah, that's phenomenal.
Yeah, the bus one's pretty cool.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's a listener-supported radio station, it means that people can get
daily, every day, a different way of looking at the world, not just what the corporate media want you to see, but a different picture, different understanding, but a different picture, a different understanding. Not only can you hear it, but you can participate in it. You can add your own thoughts, you know, and you can learn something and so on. Well, that's the way, people become human, you know. That's the way you become human participants in a social and political system.
Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/CFRC.
Welcome back to Wildcard. Just before I get back to the interview I had with Farah Muhammad, I'm going to play a short clip from a Dove ad that helps demonstrate what this campaign is all about and what it really means and does for these girls.
We are so fortunate to have 21 girls from around the world in one room.
I'm from South Africa.
India.
France.
Saudi Arabia.
Canada.
Malawi.
I came to this summit because I believe I have something to say.
We can help girls everywhere reach their full potential.
Girls, they should aim high. They need to be ambitious.
I want to join the United Nations.
Maybe the first woman that is in politics in Saudi Arabia.
Believe in your dreams, follow your dreams and do what you want to do.
What you feel about yourself is so important.
Real beauty is from within.
La vraie beauté, c'est la confiance en soi.
I am beautiful.
So I am.
You are what?
I'm beautiful.
If you could pick one issue for the Canadian government to focus on right now, what would that be?
Just one? wow. I guess my biggest issue truly is, how are we going to get innovative around job growth? You know, we have tons of young people who are coming out of school, and they should be expecting, and they should be getting jobs, and they're not. I can't tell you how many young people I run into. They're 23, 24. They're coming into a market where people are not leaving their jobs as soon as they were before. So they're working longer because they can't afford to retire. They're coming out, and they're not being able to use their skill set, so they're working retail instead of working marketing, right, in an office. Not that there's anything wrong with retail, but that's not what they want to do. They're coming out with a ridiculous amount of debt. And because we don't, in my opinion, teach really good financial fundamentals, how many people you know understand compound interest and how that can really take you down for years? I'm not talking about months, for years. So I think we fundamentally have to shift opportunity. We need to figure out, how do we take the Canadian brand? Look at us in terms of agriculture. We are giants when it comes to agriculture. Our knowledge, our know-how, we need to be able to export that knowledge. Our technology, look at BlackBerry. It changed the way people communicate. So we need to figure out, how do we actually invest in the country and the people in this country to allow them to grow, to compete, and to build? The second issue I would say is, from an international perspective, I do a lot of traveling. And this morning I was reading the Globe and I saw the story that Canada doesn't have the stature that it once enjoyed. There is no doubt, and this is not a political comment, I think no matter what government you're in, we had to face a very serious economic downturn. And often you want to turn inward. I would like us to be taken seriously on the international stage. So I will tell you that I ran into Minister Baer, the Minister of Foreign Affairs, a couple weekends ago, and I was thrilled to hear him say he wants to make a difference on an issue that I think Canada can lead on, and that's the eradication of child marriage. 14.2 million girls get married a year. 14.2. So in 10 years, 142 million girls will get married under the age of 15. Canada can lead on that. That has nothing to do with trade. That has everything to do with what's right and do we have the moral authority to lead on it, and we do.
How about on a world scale? What do you see as the most prominent world issue right now?
I mean, I'm not even sure where to start. I think, look, poverty is a big issue. I think, again, many of the same countries are facing the same challenges. There's tons of issues around health. You know, if we could just put our focus on prevention of illness. You're talking to someone who spent 3 years, or 2 years, I guess it felt like 15, in the Department of Health, working for the Minister of Health. And every day we would look at how much we spend on the other end of the spectrum. I think globally we need to figure out how to fix our health system. So with people living longer and, you know, drugs being able to help people to live longer, that's not a bad thing, but it means that there's going to be costs on the other end. If we don't find a creative, respectful way to control the cost of healthcare, no matter where you live, something else has got to give. And unfortunately, right now, the give is on the creation of all the other things that we should be doing, because we're pouring tons of money into the healthcare system.
What countries in the world do you find to be the least progressive for women's rights, and what can be done to change that?
I think we're starting to do it. I think we're starting to have a dialogue around the safety of women, around the education of women, around the importance of economically empowering these women. So I think the dialogue has started. You know, I think there are organizations that work every single day on the ground that you never hear about, that are teaching girls. The first country that obviously comes to mind is Afghanistan. When a girl gets shot in the head because she wants to learn, that's a problem. Pakistan, rape on buses, India. I mean, these are the things that we're hearing about, right? And the safety of a girl has to be paramount. If she does not feel safe enough to get on a bus and go to school, what does that mean for her? So, you know, I think we're starting to see that this is not tolerated. My big issue is this child marriage issue. I think there is absolutely no sound reason why a girl should get married at 13.
Yeah, I assume most of them are arranged.
Well, you know, I think it's hard to answer that question because arranged marriages mean many different things depending on the community that you're in. But people seem to think that it's something that is just done. You know, in Ethiopia, there are some massive, massive moves forward where people are saying, no, my daughter's not going to get married at the age of 13. And it's being led in Ethiopia. And it's being led because a group of guys and girls, and sorry, men and women, called the Elders, led by Desmond Tutu and Nelson Mandela and Mary Robinson and Gresham Machall, have decided this is going to be the issue that they're going to fight for. So they go down, they go to Ethiopia, and rather than point fingers, they say, tell us what's going to work. How are we going to work community to community to community to have men and women understand this is not a practice, this is not a proper practice? We look at that and we say, not only is it human rights, it's a disgusting thing that happens, and it is killing girls because they're having babies too young, they don't live through their childbirth, they have massive diseases later on in life. So not only are there those health and human rights aspects, 14.2 million girls are not going to be contributors to the economy. If you do the math and you look at the common sense and you combine that with human rights, there's absolutely no reason these girls should get married, period.
So how much of a change do you think the untapped potential of women in the world could have, and what problems could it solve?
It could solve all of our problems.
Yeah.
look, I think there's tons of great statistics out there, and I'll tell you one thing. And this is not a man versus woman thing. I actually don't believe that, you know, for example, our summit is not a summit for girls, by girls, to the benefit of girls. We work with guys. We want guys involved. We encourage guys to get involved. So for me, I think that if we really harness the potential of the 3.5 billion girls and women in the world, half the world's population, we will be creating new ways of thinking, new ways of negotiating, different products that will be thought of because these women are at the table, right? Women and men think differently. There's nothing right or wrong about that. There's not good or bad. It's just a fact. So, you know, when you have different people at the table, that's only good. I also think about the fact that if you look at their contributing potential, they're making money, they're paying taxes. Again, kind of common sense. And then third thing I would say is there's this really great statistic that says for every dollar that a woman makes, she puts 80% of that dollar into her kids or her house or into education, whereas a man will put 20 to 30% in. So you can sort of see how a community can really benefit from the economic empowerment of girls and women.
There's a question that just comes to my head right now. So what do you think of the lack of women in Parliament right now, and what do you believe can be done to change that?
Well, assuming that Parliament is supposed to reflect the society we live in, it's kind of unacceptable that there are so few women in Parliament. So the question is why? Why aren't there more women in Parliament? And I think the answer is we don't necessarily cultivate an atmosphere where women feel like they want to run or where they can win. So an example is we put a woman in a riding. We know her polling numbers. We know the polling numbers. And we give her this riding. She can't win. So the first thing we can do is run women in ridings where they can win. I'm not a big believer in quotas. Never have been in any way. So there are other solutions. Let's support women financially so they can have a meaningful campaign. I had the pleasure of starting my political career with a woman called Patty Torsney, member of Parliament for Burlington, 31. You'd probably know her. Yeah, you'd know her name. And she was 31 when she decided to run. She came out of a very lucrative private sector job, and she put her name on a ballot in a very conservative riding. The numbers were great. She was a phenomenal candidate. She worked really hard. And she kept that riding for many years when people expected her to lose it. But we supported her. And she worked hard. Then I worked for, what do they call? They call Landslide Annie, right? Anne McClellan. She won by one vote the first time that she won. Alberta. Pretty much a, how do you call those? Endangered species, Liberals in Alberta, right? So Anne wins. She gets the Minister of Natural Resources, goes on to be the Minister of Justice, Minister of Health, Deputy Prime Minister. And people keep saying, oh, you know, Anne's not very political. She's one of the most political people I've ever met in my life. But we do this thing where we put certain boundaries around women. We want to paint them a certain way. Why do we call women effervescent when we're describing them? Would you ever, you know, describe a guy that way? I mean, I think the way that we portray women is a problem. I think the way that we support women is a problem. But ultimately, we need to encourage more young women to see politics as a career path. So, you know, I think we all have a role to play in that. Educational, you know, institutions have a role to play in that. Our communities have a role to play in that. Media has a huge role to play in that. And then parties themselves have got to cultivate an atmosphere where women feel like they want to run. One of the biggest things I think we can do, and you know, it's funny, we're talking about this, and I'm about to say something that Marissa Meyer has just said is completely unacceptable, and that's people working from home. I'm not suggesting that our parliamentarians work from home, but I am saying we have technology now that allows people to work remotely. That's probably not a bad thing for men and for women. So I think we have to revolutionize how we do politics here in Canada, and I think you'll find a whole bunch of other people, not just women, but other people who will look at it as a serious career path.
What would you recommend to the up-and-coming women of Queens and the Kingston community, and how can they inspire change and awareness?
Yeah, I love this question also, and I'll tell you, you know, when you're in school and you're so busy trying to make the grade, you don't often do a lot of community stuff. So you get out and you've got a great education, but you probably don't know what your interests are. The one thing I would say is while you're in school, figure out what you want to do in terms of a community-based effort, whether it's working at a clinic or working remotely for somebody, you know, in Africa or whatever. Figure out what your passion is, because quite often when you get out, you're going to want to combine that passion with your education. That's the first thing. The second thing is, I hate the word mentor because I think it's overused, but go find yourself an advisor. You know, as we were just talking, I said to you, what do you want to do next? And you said, I'm going to explore possibly a radio career. And my first comment to you was, let me connect you with some of my friends in the radio business. don't wait for people to offer it to you. Ask people, right? Just say to people, I know you know so-and-so. I want, you know, will you just introduce me? I want to take them out for a coffee. These conversations actually can lead to really great things. And that is the world that we live in now. People expect that. People want to be asked for their advice. So if you ask them for some of their time, I think that's probably not a bad thing. And the third thing I would say is you got to trust your gut. So to the up-and-coming young women who, you know, if you go to a place like Queens, the world is a little bit different. You're going to a place that says you can do anything you want to do. And hopefully you walk out of here believing that. But I think take the risks. You're young enough to take the risks. You don't need to know what you're going to do 5 years from now. Figure out what you're going to do next year. And just go for it. You know, I'm 42 now. Had I known this when I was 23, I probably would have slept a lot better, partied a lot more, and not been too worried about every single step of the way. And it sounds really flippant, and I don't mean it that way, but enjoy it. Enjoy the experiences, and don't just try to rush through it to get to the next step. And if you're interested in volunteering for the Girls 20 Summit, let us know. You know, we're always looking for really bright young people who have social conscious, and they understand the value of being socially entrepreneurial.
That was great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
That was fun.